time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." And all I get and get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or an auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:09 here in the city of Philadelphia on this Sunday evening, chilly Sunday evening. And we'll be in open forum this evening. We had to switch a couple things around. A couple guests couldn't make it. And, you know, we'll kind of push them back a little bit, probably till next week. We'll shift the whole calendar around, to be honest. But that makes tonight an open forum night. So anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call and we'll talk about it. And you can do that. You can reach the program by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:14 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program, I want to bring in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Ellie.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine today, Elliot. You know, I know you said it was chilly, but it was nice out there today. I don't know. This is December, right?
Yeah, well, you know what? To be honest, I ain't been out all day. So.
Oh, check you out. Oh, that might be a great thing.
Yeah, I ain't been out all day. Just been lounging around.
I did get out there, and it was unreasonably, nice.
You better enjoy it because I don't think it's going to be that way tomorrow and the rest of the week.
I'm like, oh, no, why you didn't do that?
In fact, I think they said something about a nor'easter might put some snow in here on Thursday.
Get out of here?
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to tell our vision. But you'll see.
I'm telling you, if it wasn't for the people and You know, I wouldn't know too much more than what I see. And around me, I hate to admit this, and we kind of touched on it Friday, but I'm just amazed of the transition of seeing from seeing Black folks to white folks. And, you know, and it's just, for me, it's just a matter of making reference that.
You're talking about in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know how other people in other areas, you know, how they see their transition go on, you know, and who have lived in the area long enough and able to stay, but just to see that. And it's just interesting. I mean,
And listen, for me, it's sad because, you know, I grew up, I was on the other side of the tracks, you know, from where you are. And, you know, that neighborhood over there was traditionally Black. And I'm talking about for over 100 years.
Yeah.
And to go there now in my community and don't see anybody there, that community now is 99% white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the people are gone. It's really sad. And, you know, to see that happened under so-called Black elected officials' watch, to let their people be displaced like that,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, that just an indictment on them, period.
And to add to that, to see that displacement and some raise the question of, you know, the forced migration.
That's what it is.
To see that displacement and not see the level of dynamics, and that's what challenges me, you know, in the area that I'm in, and I don't know about other folks, because when you go into other sections where Black folks are, the level of activity as far as the, I'm going to call it viberism, not, you know, compared to, I mean, it's you don't see the same level of commercial activity, of social interaction. Around here, you see them running around. I mean, between the dogs and I ain't got nothing personal against the, you know, the people of movement. I'm just trying to make an observation and commentary. But when you go into the communities, you don't see that kind of, like, the consumer, and I don't want to call it consumerism, the economic activity, the social activity, sitting in the park. Matter of fact, around here, I've never seen the park utilized in that manner. If the park was utilized, it was for the pharmaceutical business. It was not necessarily as a part of, you know, just utilized as a recreational, you know, a being in open space outside of your, you know, in an urban area outside of maybe your porch or your yard. But you see these folks use it as, you know, open space. They got the little carts, their little, you know, children, they dogs, that, you know, and that's, you know, I'm just adding that to the commentary.
And plus, Richard, they have made sure they refurbish those, right, those parks too, and those, you know, recreation areas where,
right,
you know, when and it wasn't that long ago, you know, to talk about when you know, another generation was coming along. I'm talking about maybe a few years ago before those people start moving in. Those places looked terrible. Looked like somebody threw a bomb in there. You couldn't use the facilities. The grass grew up. Looked like a jungle. I mean, they were terrible looking. But now it's totally different.
Right.
Because I had some folks write emails about that. They wanted to hear that clip with Biden dressing down, I'll use that term, the members of the civil rights community and some of these Black elected officials. So I'm going to play that probably in the before 8 o'clock hour. So folks can hear that again. But let me mention something about some of these folks moving in, because I noticed something, and I know that you noticed it also, that the level of violence going on in these communities really haven't subsided.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of our people need to wake up and smell the coffee, but, you know, it's a lot of factors going on why this stuff is happening. But you notice something really curious. And, you know, it lends to a lot of different things. I think about the Dr. Jerome Fox, you know, the addicted to white, you know, this stuff going on in some of these communities, like where you are, is being gentrified. Where I grew up, it's totally gentrified now. And you still got our people in these neighborhoods, and they're shooting and sometimes killing and brutalizing. But they ain't brutalized, and I'm not advocating that nobody gets brutalized. But they ain't brutalizing these white folks. They walking around unscathed. They ain't kicking in their door, going in their house, ripping off their TVs, beating them up, walking down the street. They ain't taking advantage of these people. They ain't doing nothing to them.
It's definitely,
I mean, it's really strange, Richard, because people are people. I mean, if you're going to brutalize somebody, you brutalize the first person you can get your hands on. If you're of that mindset. But they kind of looking over these people to brutalize somebody that look like them. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. You know, and if you don't mind, I'm going to use that as a segue to something I'm doing Saturday, right? I'm doing a part of a team that we're doing a book review of the underground. It's called The Underground Railroad by Carlson Whitehead. And it was one scene in it, and I want to tie it to what you just said quickly. That in there, it's the protagonist is a female who liberates herself, right, from this plantation in Georgia, you know, and he takes it from her grandmother and whatever. But what was one scene where one of the new enslaved persons, and he makes it that he's Mandingo hemp. It was two of them brought onto this plantation. And she had, at 10 years old, she had this little plot of land that her grandmother, now her mother liberated herself and never came back for her. You know, that's the part of the story. But her grandmother was on this plantation, you know, directly from the continent, you know, and so she, as a young girl, was like, this was her space, right? Now, it's passed down two generations. So now this new Mandingo, he comes and he's going to, you know, like he's bored and he's, you know, the tribe is powerful and he's like wrecking havoc over the others on the plantation. And she's seeing that he's going to take over her plot. And then this, you know, I guess, you know, you're trying to imply this Dahomian, you know, the spirit rises at 10 years old and she has this hatchet and she goes up against him because he's standing like he's going to take her plot of land. And he sees in her this seriousness. And at that moment, Elliot, the thing that got me, he decided, like, I better back down. Now, obviously, he could have whipped this girl, you know, could have killed her, right? And if it was somebody else, he probably would have. But he seen that what he had to go through. And what clicked in my mind is, here is an enslaved person looking at another enslaved person and saying, I know that this is this white man's property. And if I harm this white man's property, what this white man is going to do to me. So I got to make a choice right now. Do I harm this property or not? And I'm trying to relate that to the point that you're making about in this community, because I see it. I mean, you know, it's a casual understanding. You know, there is no sense of violence being considered. And in that scene, to me, it said, there's one thing, you know, we know who not and what not to harm. Because even when we talk about those riots over the summer, who was the initial protagonist? It's not Black folks that's running into those stores initially. The images that they projected us, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, it's not Black folks. It's white folks. They're saying who's, you know, they're anarchists and whatever. That's the initial. Now, afterwards, it might be Black folks running in. Yeah, but the initial ones who was to take on this, it's not black folks. And I'm just, to me, it says there's an understanding within the slave, enslaved culture of who not to harm and what not to harm. Now, who we can harm each other, because another part in the scene, the same than one who stood up to her, he eventually tried to run away, and he got captured, and they fried him, cut his penis off, you know, put him on a stake, had the whole thing of having a party. This is the plantation owner having a party while they're doing it. This is a novel, but I think that this portrays our historical experience, right?
Mm.
And but it was okay for those guys, those enslaved males, to rape her, but it is not okay to harm her. Because rape of African women is acceptable by white men and by black men, as long as you don't harm her. But destroying or harming his property is not acceptable. And I think that, you know, and the reason I wanted to bring that up is because I see that what you're saying is it's okay to, you know, we can kill each other. I mean, thinking in Philadelphia, they said the numbers is even higher than last year. And I don't heard two deaths in the last 2 days amongst young people.
Mm-hmm.
But you have not heard in these neighborhoods that are being gentrified, no outcry about whites who are moving in these communities getting harmed in any kind of way.
No, you haven't. Which is a case study in itself, right? Because, you know, it's really weird when you see it, because they're right there. And a lot of these communities being gentrified, some of these whites coming in, I guess they consider themselves pioneers because they're moving right on blocks that's totally black, even though some of the homes they're moving into is not the same homes as you know, mm-hmm. you've been living in for mm-hmm. 30, 40, 50 years or whatever. But they're there. They're right in the community. And this stuff is going on. And they're not being harmed at all.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. It's not projecting that any harm should come to them. But aren't we looking at the psychology of a colonized people,
mm-hmm.
where a minority group, and we can look at South Africa, we can look out at a lot of places, right? A minority group can control the lives of a majority group and control the lives to where, because that you know, if somebody actually studied, why is this violence? Look at the level of activity that we have. The youth unemployment is off the chart. The economic stability, I mean, when we talk about homelessness or now, even with Corona and before Corona, the poverty level, that, you know, the amount of housing, this condition, and as you said, with having over 40 years of black political administrative influence. And I think I've seen a report where they're supposed to come up with this city council in Philadelphia is supposed to come up with a poverty plan that's supposed to address 100,000 people. And they're going to borrow the money to do it.
Wow. Yeah, well, the more things change, or the calendar changes, the more I ain't talking about things changing. The more the calendar changes, the more things stay the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's in a time when we have to organize even more, organize our thoughts, you know, like really clearly, because as you said, and when you played a clip for, I probably wouldn't even if I couldn't understand the language, if I just felt the tone of the relationship. Now, these are supposed to be people of heading institutions that's supposed to be looking out for the best interests. Well, what we just described, I mean, isn't that the kind of relationship? I mean, that tone of that back and forth occurred? Like, you just, you know, you just my pet here. No, I shouldn't say that. Well, I don't even know what to say, Owen.
Well, listen, it's the same type of relationship that still exists now. It's just, it's different because we live in more modern times, but the principles of the relationship is still the same.
Right.
Again, I'm going to play that clip for some of the listeners that did contact me by email that want to hear that again about Biden and his dressing down, so to speak, of so-called civil rights leaders and the black misleadership class. I'll use the term that Black Agenda reports use. I ain't going to call them leaders. I'm misleaders. Biden's dressing down of them. I'll play that shortly. Richard, we see that this virus is being potential vaccine is being shipped around the country now to different cities, and now the conversation is coming up about it becoming mandatory. They're in talks about it. Certain jobs might require it. Other things might start requiring it. So then it comes back to our community, because the majority, or the overwhelming majority of black people, are not interested in taking this vaccine. You got white folks even talking about it now. They're putting it all on the television, on news reports, that the black community is not interested in dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you see some of the surrogates, some of the same ones we're talking about, you know, going out here telling black people that it's safe and they need to take it. But, you know, this is going to put, just like a lot of things are going to make us, and, you know, Brother Marcus always says it about circumstances driving our people to make decisions one way or the other. We see these schools being shut down and children can't go. You know, either we're going to have the children just sit at home doing nothing, or we're going to start educating our children like we should have been doing all along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we got the situation with this vaccine, because black folks don't want to take it. And I mean, if you got any type of head on your shoulders and have any type of historical background, it's plenty of evidence why you shouldn't deal with it. You know, let's see what happens, because it's folks out there on the ground that's been dealing with this issue for a while. You'll never get it from the top down. It always comes from the bottom up. And in fact, the guest that was on last week, Brother Obi Igbona Jr., has been dealing with Cuba and Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he got international relations in a lot of different places, and with the doctors that have been going all around. I think the caller, Joe, on Friday mentioned that I think they had as of record right now, 100 and something cases that have happened on in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
of the hundreds of thousands of people that lived there, I think they had like 100 or maybe a couple of hundred cases of coronavirus, or deaths of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something going on that's positive there, and that's been helping the people. Other nations of the world recognize it, but to the United States and to their quote-unquote European brethren, the only ones that's doing anything is Pfizer, mm-hmm. AstraZeneca, Johnson and whoever, Johnson and Johnson, I don't know all the companies involved. I think it's three or four of them. They're the only ones doing things. But we see here, we see now that I think Russia already has some type of vaccine that they've been shipping all around. China has one that they've been shipping around, because I think Israel has bought vaccines from all of them and planning to buy some from the United States. So, you know, it seems to be a race instead of people working together, and especially Europeans. You know, they've never really worked well with other people, and especially people of color, but they never really worked well with other people anyway. It's always been about white supremacy. Mm-hmm. So to them, they're the only ones doing anything in relation to this. But I just brought that up because, you know, we see this potential vaccine going around now, and they're going to require or want people to take it, start taking it. So, you know, they kind of push the onus right back into the laps of our people and what we plan to do. But anything that's going to be done, Richard, it has to start first with organizing.
I'm going.
You can't do it as a lone wolf. Go ahead.
I'm engaged with different groups and I'm going through this discussion of organizing and I see that the people saying, well, what I can do, and you know, raising the question of, and to me, it's the question of being organized versus what you can do as an individual or what you want to do as an individual in the name of the people. And it's just so interesting because it's I don't know, how do we get to the point of being organized enough? Because looking at this health crisis that we're in, just like the economic crisis and others, to where we're at the point of self-governance. Because this, even this election, and even what we'll hear, is not talking about how we're governing ourselves compared to what we want from somebody else who is governing us. And I don't know if that makes sense, that those are two different things. You know, and it just puzzles me that, you know, that we haven't realized, and as you said, the circumstances hasn't got acute enough yet to where we see that the only way of dealing is to self-governance. And we do have historical models, because if we go to the 19th century all the way up to 1940 or whatever, Black people were governing themselves when we talk about these towns and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like that doesn't even come up as a ideal or as a part of our own internal propaganda. I mean, it was just a matter of the 60s and 70s when we were talking about self-governance in the popular, in the open public, talking about self-governance, and you had symbols, you know, whether Republic of New Africa, you know, the Black Farmers Collective, you had symbols of this being understood, or, you know, what was that, the whole thing of the 64 with the Mississippi, I always Lowndes County. That was about self-governance, utilizing the political process, not for self-governance. But when you say organization, it seems like, I don't know what is missing here. You know, are we afraid to govern ourselves?
Well, I think it kind of coincides with what we talked about earlier. I don't think some of our people have confidence in one another. They don't believe that we have the intelligence to do it. And I'm talking about the small percentage of our population.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we feel as though if Europeans are not involved or not advising or have some type of leadership positions in something, then it's not worthy of any consideration. And, I mean, that's a bad thing to say, but some of our people feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, as we move towards, you know, this is the month where the principles, you know, the Kwanzaa principle, we're moving towards Kwanzaa, and, you know, those seven principles and the whole ideal, again, those principles were to reinforce that historically that we've been a people who successfully been able to govern ourselves. Even under crisis, internal crisis. I mean, that's in absence of any foreign people, right? We've still been able to, and when we say govern, right, that's about solving problems, right? Whether it's about drought, whether it's about disease, whether it's about even conflict between each other. We were able to figure out how to solve problems. But it makes it seem like we can't solve no problem. We got to have somebody running on a horse. And unfortunately, a white horse is that, at that. I guess they don't use no horses no more. So electric vehicle, self-driving car, in order to be able to solve our problem. even with this here, you know, going to that point you made, Cuba made open arms to our community that they were willing to share the medical, not only the medical development of doctors, but even the results of in relationship to the vaccine. Shouldn't we, if we are distrustful, you know, whether it's legitimate or not, but if we are distrustful of the medical infrastructure, the medical, now they're using ecosystem, and I don't know what that number is of, but it must be large enough for them because they're pulling out all stops and trying to get Black folks to make sure they take this vaccine, right? If we're that distrustful, shouldn't we be able to say to Cuba, well, let's try your medical approach?
Well, I mean, you would think that Black folks have that option in a free democracy, so to speak. But the leadership that have been voted upon and sometimes appointed, most of the time voted upon or elected by other Black folks, don't see it that way. They don't see that as a viable option. It's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I remember when Obiagbona Jr. was on with us during the summer, I think, mm-hmm. when he first was mentioning about the doctors going around, and he talked about the memorandum of understanding that had been signed with the Black Caucus 20 years ago to cultivate Black folks to go to medical school in Cuba free of charge, and they would come back to the communities and work in the communities for at least the 4 years that they would spend in school. Mm-hmm. So you could see that that memorandum of understanding that they did sign,
mm-hmm.
somebody put a monkey wrench in it or told them, you're not going to do that. And that's what was done.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of the same thing that happened when the Black Caucus wanted to get together with Minister Farrakhan and other people to start mending fences and working for the best interests of the Black community, supposedly,
right.
until Jewish leadership and others jumped in, and all of a sudden things change.
Mm-hmm.
So this misleadership class works at the whim of other people, and they work against the interests of the majority of Black people. And that's the reality of it. That's not, you know, some people might like these people. They might have a nice image of them, a la the Obamas. But the reality is that those people do not work in the best interests of other Black people. And I'm going to play that clip with the Biden. Before we do that, Richard, because I was talking to a good friend of mine that was a psychologist up there at the prison system. They got 5 prisons up there on State Road here in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to read this article first. It came from a published report, and it's a couple of weeks old. So you know that the numbers have went up drastically since then. But let me read this. It says, amid a spike in COVID-19 cases, Texas is paying prison inmates $2 an hour to move bodies of deceased victims of the disease. While prison labor is common practice across the U.S., the reliance on inmates to handle tasks of moving corpses of COVID-19 victims is raising questions about the ethics of such work. The counties has inmates who are working to move bodies of coronavirus victims, according to Chris Acosta, public affairs director at the El Paso County Sheriff's Office. She describes them as low-level offenders, and she said that they provide full PPE when they go to the morgues and hospitals. The work is 100% voluntary. It's great that these individuals are stepping up to volunteer and to assist the community in dire need of their help right now. To be sure, prison labor isn't unusual. Prisons rely on inmates to perform jobs for little or no pay. But the context of relying on inmates to perform risky work sparked concerns about their treatment during a surge in COVID-19 cases in Texas. In recent years, prisoners have gone on strike to protest work conditions and low pay. While the 13th Amendment outlawed slavery, in 1865, it includes one exception, people who are duly convicted of crimes. Because of that exception, prisoners can be paid nothing for their labor. And in fact, there are five states, including Texas, that regularly prison jobs are unpaid. The average wage for prisoners for jobs that aren't performed range from 14 to 63 cents an hour, according to nonprofit group Prison Policy Initiative. So we see here that these prisoners supposedly getting paid $2 an hour, although this report says that Texas is one of the states that don't have to pay them anything. Now, the reason I'm mentioning that, because a buddy of mine who was a psychologist up there at the prison retired in March. In fact, he retired 2 weeks before this stuff broke out. And he said that his secretary, his former secretary, called him the other day just to, you know, just to kind of talk to him about what's going on up there and things of that nature. And she mentioned that a lot of the guards was out there on State Road. Now, you know what State Road is in Philadelphia, mm-hmm, Richard, mm-hmm. Out there protesting with signs, protesting the working conditions inside. Mm-hmm. You know, because the warden expects them to go in there and, you know, do their job and monitor the prisoners and things of that nature. But the prisoners, well, they're packed in, number one. They don't have the PPE, number two, any protective equipment. He said that they're wearing T-shirts over their face and things of that nature.
Mm.
But they expect guys that go home every day to their families and at work to go in there and guess do their job. So a lot of these guys was, you know, out there on the street protesting. But the reason I mention that is because, and it kind of coincides with this article here that using prison labor to move infected bodies. And supposedly these men volunteered to do it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what always from the beginning of this whole thing of as the coronavirus started, one of the concerns with me when they were talking about the early release because of the infestation, you know, of the virus in the community. What happens when these guys come back within the neighborhood? Yeah. We don't know. I mean, we haven't had a real, that I'm aware of. Now, maybe we haven't had a real serious testing. As you know, I mean, the best they've been saying is that everybody can do is to wear masks, right? Which that puts it on you, the onus on you. But there has been no like serious within the areas that people live testing infrastructure. Now it's going to be interesting to see how they do this vaccine infrastructure, right? Because they have to be close to where people are in order for people to be able to get the vaccine. And that's why the whole thing of making it mandatory or, you know, even if it's pseudo-mandatory, like if you're going to work, you got to be able to prove you got it. Or if you're going to go to school, you have to be able to have that. But how are they going to, you know, in neighborhoods, how are they going to get people who don't, a lot of people in certain neighborhoods don't come out of their neighborhood. So what is going to be the process for that? But here you have the, where we have a large, especially, you know, prison population who will be coming back into the community, into their families. How is that going to play out in relationship to them possibly being carrying the virus? And an example you're giving in Texas is that they're doing constant work, or the, you know, the brother just retired, where these people, you know, are doing these, you know, have to go to work. Right? They, you know, what's that, essential workers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to go. And here we hear at the Senate and Congress level, the biggest debate even for fight to try to ease the financial pain in some kind of way by unemployment or another check, it's being held up because they want to make sure, you know, they're saying it's McConnell, but, you know, that whole crew, they want to make sure that the companies are not held liable if somebody is forced to come to work. Yes, it's your decision, right? It's your decision. You don't have to come to work, But look, if you ain't got no, you ain't got no wealth to fall back on to say I can live 2 years till this thing blow over, you have to go to work. But they're holding this thing up because they want to make sure that these companies are not held accountable if they force people to come to work and they contact the virus, and unfortunately they may pass. They don't want to get sued.
Yeah, it's always about that dollar bill, telling you. Richard, I want to play this clip again before we take a break with Biden dealing with the quote-unquote civil rights leaders and black elected officials. Before we do that, I want to play two brief clips, less than a minute, of Dr. King and his assessment of what he had done. And when I say what he had done, unlike some of the other men during that period of the 60s, Richard, King, and I'm not talking about some of those other ones like, what's his name, that was FBI informant that worked with King.
Bernard?
Rustin and all of them. I'm not talking about them because they were bought and paid for. I mean, people didn't know it. The evidence have come out since. The reason I'm mentioning King, because King was willing to, even though he started a movement or was involved in a movement that was basically grassroots, he was willing to work with Europeans that wanted to, quote unquote, help. Before he was assassinated, especially the last 2 years of his life, he started saying things that kind of shed a different light on his experience dealing with them directly.
Mm-hmm.
I want to play two of his clips because I think it deals directly with the mindset that these people have, where they don't learn from history. Now, they'll be given Dr. King accolades in about another 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't learn. We're supposed to learn from mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite sure he said these things because he wanted people to hear them and to understand, especially his people, to understand what he was saying when he was saying it. I want to play these two clips before I play this thing that Biden said. But listen to King and his perspective on his experience dealing with Europeans and his advice to his own, because his advice to his own had something to do with what you mentioned about a half hour ago, Richard. But let me play these two clips before I play this Biden thing. If I can get the right one here. Let me see here. I think this is one of them.
And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality, and they are always looking for an excuse to go, but so far.
Now, that was his assessment, and that came, I think, about 6 months before he was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was working with Europeans before that. But that was his analysis and conclusion that he had come to before he was murdered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That they're always looking for an excuse, and they only want to go but so far. They was only reacting and getting on blacks' bandwagon, so to speak, because they were reacting to Jim Clark. They were embarrassed when the TV at that time started putting Jim Clark and what's his name, Wallace, on there talking crazy. They were embarrassed by it. The same way that these Europeans now is embarrassed by Trump. Mm. It's the same thing. But his assessment still stands. These people are only going to go but so far. Now, let me play this other clip because he said something directly to his own in this particular clip.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood.
Mm. Now, notice the two things he said. He said in the clip before that, 6 months or 8 months before he was murdered, that he realized that these Europeans are not interested in being honest. They only want to go but so far.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said a month before, if I'm not mistaken, a month before he was murdered in this last clip, that it's no Johnsonian civilization. We got to do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. That was his message to black folks. Mm-hmm. That if we're going to do this, we got to do it ourselves. He didn't say a coalition. We need white help. He might have believed that at one time, but we could see that his understanding of the situation had changed. Now, maybe some of these officials need that lesson, or maybe they don't care. They're going to do what they want to do anyway because it benefits them personally. But if they're interested in the welfare of their people, maybe they would take some of those words to heart. But let me play this clip here that Biden here if I can find it. I got these things all kind of jumbled together. Yeah, this is it.
We ready to go?
Hello.
On Tuesday, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris held a private Zoom call with a small group of civil rights leaders from across the country.
This is a completely closed call, so just wanted to remind you of that. There's no recording.
Clearly, somebody did record. And now I have a copy of it, and now you're listening to it. Present for the Zoom was Derek Johnson, president of the NAACP, Vanita Gupta, a former ACLU attorney who was Obama's civil rights division head, the Reverend Al Sharpton, Sherrilyn Ifill, Melanie Campbell, who is the president of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, and soon-to-be former Congressman Cedric Richmond, who Biden has named an assistant to the president. In many ways, it was a Zoom call like any other.
Can't hear you, Cedric. You're on mute.
It also included a few Biden-esque boasts.
I'm the first person, black or white, who called attention to the fact that you were finding that there was the rate of people who were African-Americans are dying was three times that of white people. I don't carry around.
Wait a minute. You know, we talked about this Friday.
He said, I said it before you Negroes even said it.
Yeah. Let me keep on going.
I'm a stamp on my head saying progressive and I'm AOC, but I have a more of a record of getting things done in the United States Congress than anybody you know. Anybody you know.
Okay, now let me stop there. You know, black folks jumped, nearly jumped through the window when that idiot Trump was saying that he did more for black folks than anybody except Lincoln or something like that. Mm-hmm. That bigot. But what's the difference between what that idiot Trump said and what this guy just said? Mm-hmm. He just didn't mention Lincoln. Mm-hmm. But he said he did more for you than anybody you know, Richard. And then he repeated it. Anybody you know.
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, the first part got me. Black or white?
Well, listen, they need to take a page out of it. They always running around talking about Dr. King, this Dr. King. Take a page out of his book a year before he died. Don't let anybody take your manhood. And believe me, when he was talking to black folks about them doing for themselves, you know who he was talking about when he said that. Let me continue.
Some Biden cringe.
By 2040, this country is going to be minority white European. Hear me? Minority white European. And you guys are going to have to start working more with Hispanics, who make up a larger portion of the population than y'all do.
And some Biden temper.
Okay, now wait a minute, Richard. Now, he didn't tell, he can give him instructions. This is who you're going to have to work with. But, you know, in that, you know, I don't know whether the guy's is senile. There's been rumors about him with Alzheimer's or whatever. But, you know, him saying what he said is more ammunition why a lot of black folks don't want to bother with this vaccine from Europeans.
Right.
What he just stated. If white folks know that they're going to be the minority in this country, you think they're interested in helping you or your children be healthy? You know what I'm saying, Richard?
No, that's, hey, look, the whole tone of, I'm just listening to the tone
of. Get the tone of it.
You don't have no control over you.
I'm telling you, and you're going to listen. Because I didn't hear no back and forth. All I heard was silence. Just remember those old Uncle Toms. Dr. King told you to don't let anybody take your manhood. Let me keep on playing.
Let's get something straight. You shouldn't be disappointed. What I've done so far is more than anybody else has done this far. Okay? Number one. Number two, I mean what I say when I say it.
But it was also a space.
Now, wait a minute, Richard. If you remember, now that's for the listening audience that didn't hear on Friday. This meeting was Tuesday. And they met with him because they were disappointed in some of his cabinet posts that he was posting. They felt as though it should be more blacks represented. So you heard his answer. And just in case the listening audience didn't get it or missed it, let me play it again.
Personnel to executive action to legislation. Many of those in the meeting urged Biden to be aggressive in his use of executive.
One. Number two, I mean what I say when I say it.
But it was also a space for an airing of, if not grievances, at least slight disappointments, and a forum for civil rights leaders to lobby Biden on everything from personnel to executive action to legislation. Many of those in the meeting urged Biden to be aggressive in his use of executive power.
I want to ask that you consider issuing an executive order to create a national task force to examine challenges to our democracy, a national voter access commission.
It's going to be important, for example, that one of your first actions is a reversal of the executive order that President Trump promulgated that essentially seeks to gag conversations about diversity, race, and history among anyone who contracts with the federal government. And so we would ask you to lend your voice and your strength and your influence and your power and your ability to reach across the aisle to try and pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. But failing that, we would ask you to pull from that act measures that can be enacted by executive order. You have the power to call for a national database on police misconduct. You have the power to ask for a registry that will allow people to easily search in public multiple misconduct complaints against particular officers. You have the ability to impose a database around police killings and police shootings. And these are things that you can do by executive order. There is a prison tragedy that is unfolding because of COVID. I encourage you to use your power to order an investigation of state and local prisons and jails to find out precisely what is happening. And you have that power through the Department of Justice.
And here's Al Sharpton.
We don't care about throwing fists in the air and the symbols. We want the substance. The Joe Biden I know is substance.
Wait a minute,
Kamala Harris, I know.
He's talking to them.
Well, say that again, Richard.
He's talking to the black folks there. That it sounds to me.
Yeah, but he's talking. But who is he talking about?
About, right. But he's telling them, Joe Biden I know. So he's like y'all coming at him, like coming at his neck, but that ain't, you know, like that's the Joe Biden I know. The Joe Biden I know, he gonna do these things.
Yeah, and he's talking about your children or the activists you know that's out in the street and with their fists in the air, because he ain't talking about no white people.
Mm-hmm.
The fists in the air, they ain't about nothing. They ain't about substance.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden is about substance.
That's what I'm saying. He's a cheerleader for Biden. Where the woman, she was saying, this is what you can do.
Yeah, well, let's hear his answer. Mm-hmm. And just keep in mind what Dr. King said, that if you do anything, you got to do it yourself. Look at his answer to her.
We need it now more than ever. And I would hope that the first day you start doing the things with your executive orders to restore some dignity to law enforcement in our community and the voting.
Biden, in fact, has an enormous amount of power as president. Two episodes ago, we devoted an entire show to just that. It turns out that Biden does not appear to be a deconstructed subscriber. Here's how he responded to those calls.
There's some things that I'm going to be able to do by executive order. I'm not going to hesitate to do it. But what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do what used to, Vanita, you probably used to get angry with me during the debates, when you'd have some of the people you were supporting said, on day one, I'm going to executive order to do this. Not within the constitutional authority. I am not going to violate the Constitution. There is a Constitution. It's our only hope. Our only hope.
I want the listening on the understand, black folks, the Constitution is your only hope, and he ain't violating it. And you know that document had nothing to do with you. You were 3/5 of a human being. So that's his answer to you. All those black servants running around telling people, get him out of there, you're substituting one slave master for the other. That's his answer to you. That's his answer to your leadership. Let me finish this up.
And the way to deal with it is where I have executive authority, I will use it to undo every single damn thing this guy has done by executive authority. But I'm not going to exercise executive authority where it's questioned, where I can come along and say, I can do away with assault weapons. There's no executive authority to do away with that. And no one's fought harder to get rid of assault weapons than me. Me. But you can't do it by executive order. If you do that, next guy comes along and says, well, guess what? By executive order, I'm going to say everybody can own machine guns again. So we got to be careful. I know you all know this. I know you know it. And poor Kamala's heard me say this, and so has Cedric. I used to have a friend named Bob Gold, who was a really bright guy. Not much of it. We went to school together. He wasn't an academic whiz.
The Bob Gold story sadly doesn't go anywhere. The upshot of the anecdote is that he taught Biden the word overstand, which is a kind of black power term from back in the day that was used as a stand-in for understand, but adding in an element of higher level awareness.
He looked at me and said, Joe, I not only understand you, I overstand you. I'm sure you overstand me here.
Oh, Richard, I'm telling you, wow. Let me go ahead.
Shoni Sherrod is a civil rights legend, a hero. I live in the state of Mississippi. I'm surrounded by civil rights icons, and I understand the reverence that many of them have, particularly in rural areas. So I want to make sure that as you consider appointments, that you do so with November 5th in mind, so that we don't miss an opportunity to be able to get confirmed some of the outstanding candidates that you're going to bring forward. If you decide to take that route, I strongly encourage you to reach out to Ms. Sherrod, have a conversation with her. I strongly encourage you to talk to black farmers so that you have a clear understanding of the impact any decision can have on the January 5th election. It is our goal as NAACP, it is our goal as civil rights community for this administration to be successful. And it can only be at the success we needed to be if we have the ability to get good people confirmed.
Biden, however, used the warning on Sherrod as a jumping off point for a counter warning. Don't push too hard on police reform, he told the group. At least not now.
One of the things I'd be concerned about, just as was pointed out to me that you wanted me to be concerned, Derek, I think it was you said it, about, you know, dealing with Vilsack as in terms of agriculture. Well, first of all, you can learn more about Vilsack's record. But my point is this. I don't think we should make that a big issue going into before January 5th when the election.
Wait a minute, Richard. He told him you need to learn more about his record. You think that they don't know who that guy is and what he has done? Now, that guy, Johnson or whatever, is head of the NAACP. He said he's been in touch with black farmers about this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know several of the heads of the black farmers organizations. Several of them have been on this program. So they know about this Vilsack before he did what he did to Shirley Sherrod. But his answer to them is, listen, educate yourself on Vilsack and get to this. Because he gave them another instruction. He didn't want to hear anything complaints about Vilsack because you could see that he turned around and still nominated Vilsack or appointed him. But he told him, he gave him different instructions. Don't worry about Vilsack. You worry about this.
In terms of agriculture. Well, first of all, you can learn more about Vilsack's record. But my point is this. I don't think we should make that a big issue going into before January 5th when the election takes place down in Georgia. But I also don't think we should get too far ahead of ourselves on dealing with police reform in that, because they've already labeled us as being defund the police. Anything we put forward in terms of the organizational structure to change policing, which I promise you will occur, promise you, because that's how they beat the living hell out of us across the country, saying that we're talking about defunding the police. We're not. We're talking about holding them accountable. I just raise it with you to think about. And as Reverend Al said, I was a pain in the ass to everybody except him when we did the commission before. I didn't think we went far enough. As I learned early on, it's all right to question your opponents, and you're not my opponents, any of you. It's always appropriate to question your opponent's judgment. It's never appropriate to question their motive, even if you know it. So we can be tough, question judgment, not motive, to get things done. Anyway, I'm going to yield to my vice.
Richard, don't question his motives, Richard.
They do.
They're in your best interest. And they won't question his motives. They bought and paid for. That's what they're there for. To carry out his wishes. So, you know, it is what it is. We know what we have to do as black folks out here involved in struggles. I ain't going to say in the struggle because it's not just one. It's struggles. So we can't rely on those folks. We're going to have to do it ourselves, just like Dr. King said in that clip that I played. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot, and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com. IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Commits You Black family, to join your interconnected Commits You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football.
These left them fools, child.
Since the 60s, you will see nothing but betrayals by the petty bourgeois elements in our society. The African bourgeoisie is the most corrupt bourgeoisie in the world. In Africa, they seek luxury in the midst of mass suffering. There are more Mercedes in Africa than in any other continent in the world. In America, as soon as they arrive at a position based on the blood of the people, they snatch that position and run away from the people. But you must not think that they represent the people. They only represent their opportunistic self, using the people every step of the way. So you must not be confused. The petty bourgeoisie everywhere will be running for cover, but the masses will spare them not. Consequently, we who have dedicated our lives to the people's struggle, we who knowing that the people will always be free, we understanding that we must make a contribution to qualify our struggle since the 60s, have been dedicating all our energies to only one task, the organization of the masses of our people. We are not running for mayor. We're not running for president. No changes can come from the top down. We're not stupid. Changes can only come from the bottom up. The masses and the masses alone can make them. If you want to learn something from the 60s, the lesson is simple. Organize the masses of the people. Thank you.
I am an African. The death of my brother is also my death. Let me put this question to you again, because many foolish black middle classes and many foolish people who are eating well think that they can sit in America and watch this country destroy the African continents, and watch this country destroy African Caribbeans, and watch this country destroy Africans in Central and South America, and think that these same people who destroy Africans abroad will not be the same people who destroyed them in America. There are fools in this country who try to claim that they are not Africans, who claim that they do not see color, as if their not seeing color makes any difference in the world. Simply because you don't see color doesn't mean somebody does not see you as color. And that's the issue. And you think then that you can sit in this country while this same nation and these same people that you sleep with and marry and love and so forth can go out and destroy African people and not think those people do not see you as African. Even though you choose not to see yourself as African, you better think again. You're out of your minds and you're headed for death. You must understand that. Hide behind it. I am an American. Ladies and gentlemen, the death and destruction of black people will follow those kind of abstractions.
You left so shadows on my mind, with deep shadows.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:25 here in the city of Philadelphia. We're in open forum this evening. Anything that's on your mind, you can give us a call. We'll talk about it, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Richard.
Yes, yes.
Let me go take a couple of these calls and see see what's on mine. Let's go to 267. 267, are you there? 267? Let me put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away or something's going on. Let's go to 444.
Hey, brothers, how y'all hear me, man?
Hey, sir.
Hey, Eddie, who was the last two brothers that were speaking on that collage you just played?
Amos Wilson and Kwame Ture.
All right, they was right on the money. I appreciate that. Now, when that first collage you played with Dr. Martin Luther the King, when that devil asked him about, are we going to be something what the white man want us to be, man? I think that was kind of offensive right there. But he didn't even say that. Are we going to be what the white folks want us to be, man? You see what I'm saying? I caught that on the first collage there with Dr. King. But then the second one, he was right on the money. But with this Joe Hyde and Joe Biden thing, man.
No, wait a minute. Let me go back on what you said, because he asked him, he said, do you think let me get it right. If I end up having to play it again, Richard, help me with this. I think he said, do you have any idea what the Negro, what did he say? Does the Negro have any idea what white folks want them to be? Did he say that, Richard?
Yeah.
And I think King answered.
Well, like I said, that's offensive because what they want to be, man. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I listen. I understand. Like King. I understand clearly what you're saying. But, Wes, let me ask you something. Do you think, because that reporter asked him that in 1968, just before he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. No, it was 67, because I think it was 6 months before he was killed. So it was 67 when he asked him that. You think that their mindset has ever changed? They want you to be a certain way. They're requiring the quote-unquote Negro, black folks, African-American, to be a certain way here. And if you're not that way, it's unacceptable as far as they're concerned.
That's right. So to answer your question, hell to the no. Them devils ain't gonna. That's what I'm trying to tell you Friday, man. Okay? They so damn condescending. They always want to talk down to us like we still their slaves, man. And I'm sick of them doing that, man. So like I said, only white person can do for me, if they ain't going checking their own folk like John Brown, bruh, it's up. We gonna have to do our own thing, man. And I kind of wish Joe Hyde and Joe Biden, at least somebody, just start picking people off the street, man. Instead of going through these same old wash and recycle Negroes, man. They're selling us out, man. So I'm sick of them, man. All of them. Even that damn Melanie Campbell lady. I remember her. She bought and paid by them Old Testament. Because I remember when Bev Smith was having that forum, and that Melanie Campbell said, she can't be on the forum unless she get rid of the minister, Farrakhan. I remember that lady telling me, because I remember Bev Smith said that. That Melanie Campbell, almost cussed, man. I remember her telling Miss Bev Smith, if she don't get rid of the minister on her conference, she can't come, or something like that, man. That Melanie Campbell lady, she'll sell out, man. And I'm sick of them. I try to give our people the benefit of the doubt, man, but I'm sick of them, man. So we're going to have to do our own thing. Man. I don't like wasting my energy talking about these damn sellouts, man. But I'm sick of them, bro. I really am, man. The same old washed-up ass charlatan, he a government agent, too. I found out he wore a wife. In the Genovese family around him, man. I heard a tape where the Genovese said, Al Sharpton is his bitch, man. That's what the Genovese family said, man. You can pull that tape up, man. Okay, I know Al Sharpton. I don't like be sitting there talking about these clowns. That's a waste of my energy, man. But, hey, I love y'all, man. I'm just like what Dr. King said. I done signed my own self-emancipation with my own ink pen, man. As far as this shot thing, man, you know they got a sister that's old Foster bringing her out talking about she came up with the vaccine. Her name is, to check her name out, Kissing Me, I think y'all the thing, her name is Kissing Me something Cobra. But she slipped up and told us that this disease and this damn shot is black genocide. She said it, man, about two years ago. But I sent y'all an article, but I'm trying to find where she said that, man. That same sister that's over the NIH, National Institute of Health and Allergies. They run that game, man. I'm going to tell y'all something. I took that polio vaccine. My granddaddy had us take that when I was 5 years old. And I ended up with kidney cancer, man. I got a scar, me and my cousin, okay? And me and my cousin ended up with kidney cancer, man. So I'd be damned if I'm taking that vaccine. But as a matter of fact, I took me a flight on Thanksgiving, man. I went and got on an airplane. It took me a $50 flight, man. That's what I do. I told y'all, anything them crackers say, do, I do the opposite, man. And I'm going to leave it like that to the family, man. Because it took me half my lifetime to learn them lies he done told us. And the other half of my lifetime, they erased all that crap out of my head, man, to get the truth. So it is what it is, man. I don't want to get amped up. You know, y'all sure, because I might end up saying some cuss words. And then, you know,
well, when you was on that plane, you had a mask on, didn't you?
Yeah, I had the mask on, because if not, they ain't going to let you fly. So I wore the mask.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? I wore the mask on. Walking through the airport, I took the mask off. Yeah, so you got to do the opposite, man, of whatever these folks do, man. They want to keep you in the house, blah, blah, blah. Do the opposite, man. I learned that. Okay, in the second half of my life, I do the opposite of what they do and what they say, because I'm not going to be their Negro, man. Not going to do it, bro. I can't do it. I'm for the people, man. Power to the people, y'all. It's all up to us to stop this, man. Okay? Power to the people. I'm going to I'm gonna drop the mic, let you get back to regular scheduled programming. And I appreciate it, man. Let somebody else talk, man.
Talk to you, Wes.
Hey, Elliot, can I share a paragraph out of this? Again, you know, again, I apologize, but I'm pushing this presentation we're doing. And it speaks to the point that you just made, or both, you know, you and Wes was talking about, as far as in that clip about what they expect us to do, right? That they have expectation for us. Now, this is centered, you know, in the 1850s, from the 1830s to 1850s. And this is a slave catcher. And he's finally caught the person that liberated herself. And he's upset because he couldn't catch her mother, you know, and here she ran away. And he was determined that he was going to get one of them back. But this is what he says in relationship to their role and the way they look at us. And he says, we do our part. His name is Ridgway. Slave and slave catcher, master and colored boss. Yeah, and that part, colored boss. The new arrivals steaming into the harbors, and the politicians and sheriffs and the newspapermen and the mothers raising strong sons. People like you and your mother are the best of your race. The weak of your tribe have been weeded out. They die in the slave ships, die of our European pox in the fields working our cotton and indigo. You need to be strong to survive the labor and to make us greater. We fatten hogs, not because it pleases us, but because we need hogs to survive. But we can't have you too clever. We can't have you so fit you outrun us. And it seems that fits right into this point about the way they want us to be, right? We can't have you too fit, because if you do, you would outrun us. And what we heard is that characterization, that those men and women who are asking, and the response of Biden is, Biden is saying, we can't have you too fit, especially around the police, which are slave catchers, right? Don't bring that up, because that's just going to cause problems for me. And I don't know if that fit, but it seemed to fit in, and this is a narrative construct, and it's just how we have to understand the environment we're in and why we need to be looking for the leadership that we need right now. Those young men and women, those young women and men who are out there now that we don't see, we have to identify them, who has the, who are the strong, but who are not, who are not bowing down. They have to be the ones we raise up, because if we don't, these Negroes is colored bosses.
Yeah. Because, you know, Richard, and I know the listening audience understand the gravity of it, but he wasn't just sitting in that meeting talking to however many. I'm quite sure now, I think about seven of them were named, but I'm quite sure it was quite a few elected officials and representatives of organizations at that meeting, Zoom meeting. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't saying it to them. He was saying it because they represent constituents and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants them to go back and spread this word and tell other people involved in those organizations. Other officers in the organizations are supposed to spread this down to the rest of the folks. If you're an elected official, you're supposed to go in the community and have your ward leaders and whoever spread this around to the rest of the folks. It wasn't like he was just talking to them at that meeting. He was talking to them to tell hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of black folks that this is what we want. This is what I want. Because, I mean, you see that now, I don't know who came up with it first, but you see afterwards, or little before, Obama was running around saying the same thing, scolding the black community because they was running around saying defund the police. And black folks didn't come up with that slogan about defund no police.
Right.
That was white folks that started that narrative about defunding the police.
Yeah, and I would say again that that come out of the university. That didn't come out of, that didn't just come out of even those radical white folks, those anarchists or progressives. That comes out of the progressive academic world, just again like the whole idea of African males being predators. That came out of the academy. That didn't come out of the street. That didn't come out of organized. That came out of those, and that particular one, that particular policy initiative came out of the university, a professor at the University of Penn. So we have to be clear, and they're putting it on us like we're the ones that's pushing it.
Boy, well, I'm telling you, let's go back to the, let's go to 602.
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, good evening. Brother Marcus here.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brother. Just to address, when you started the program, you were talking about black people, you know, and that self-destructive behavior. You know, we know that that is caused by black self-hatred, you know, and an inspiring curriculum in the school system that doesn't amplify black contribution, because they don't have to teach black hatred in the school. They just don't teach nothing about you at all. You know, they just leave you out of the history books of the history, so you don't see yourself. But I think one of the best psychologists to address our situation, the psychology of black people in America, is Dr. Amos Wilson. You know, and he's all over YouTube. If you can't get this, our people can't get his books, he's all over YouTube. And he addresses the psychology of black people, that self-destructive psychology of black people. Another thing is religion and how religion plays into the mind of black people, into the psychology of black people, because they give you the white man as your savior in the image of Jesus, but they also give you, we also see the white man as the oppressor. So I think that really frees black people mind right here, you know, it get conflicted right here because we are given, oh, this white man is your savior, but he's the oppressor at the same time. So that confuses us and keep us in a kind of frozen psychological state. But, you know, we going to get out of this situation, you know, because it's finna get thicker now. You know, it's going to get thicker after the new year. Because when all these programs, these moratoriums run out, when all the unemployment run out, then we go really see, you know, it's going to really hit the fan. And it's going to drive us. You know, I was talking to a friend today, and he told me, he said, look, he said, on 125th Street in Harlem, it's the pure homeless people. It's just homeless on the street, in the subway. You know, in New York City, you know, you can't ride the subway no more. The homeless used to ride the subway. They can't ride the subway now, so they're sleeping in the subway. They're sleeping on the subway platform, sleeping in the street, and it's predominantly black people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and the mental illness that come with homelessness. So now these people are, you know, creating another problem, you know, with the society too, cause, you know, so it's as you said, we, you know, when all else fail to organize the people, conditions will, we're gonna be forced to do the right thing. It's kind of tragic, you know, that sometimes we got to be, they said, black people never know themselves until they're back against the wall. Well, we're going to have to be pressed into the wall, you know, to risk to move. But we're going to move because we are survivors. That's what we do. We survive. And we go throw these people off eventually. We won't have to figure out a way to throw them off our backs because they are parasites. Yeah, you know, and the parasite has to have a host. You see, we're going to have to figure out a way how to let them be a parasite on themselves. You know, two parasites can't live, you know, together, you know. So, you know, we're going to have to figure it out. But I think, you know, conditions are going to drive us to that point. So, you know, anyway, good brothers, I appreciate this program. Keep on keeping on. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution.
Thank you, brothers. Take care.
Let's move to another call. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Let's put them back on hold. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from? Let's go move to 26.
Hello?
26.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, greetings, brother. This is Brother Maurice from New York City. How y'all doing?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I was chomping at the bit as I was listening to this intelligent conversation, wanting to join in. And the thing that I thought was so powerful about the piece that you used with Dr. King was that the part that you didn't play talked about that it said that the people told a lie one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they made everything that was dark and, you know, considered black to be evil or whatever. And we need to move away from that narrative. So that when he said, because be proud of yourself and that black is beautiful. And I think that, you know, when I look at the ease of which we can destroy someone that looks like us, then I think that we lost that narrative. We lost what our ancestors talked about. We lost that sense of who we are when we can easily kill somebody that looks like us. And I can personally say that because in November, my nephew was killed.
Oh, wow.
Drive-by shooting. In you know, people standing outside and car drove by, shot him and killed him and stuff, you know. And then I think about, you know, I just saw him during the summertime, and he was remembering, you know, the time that I spent with him, doing stuff with him when he was a kid, you know, and he was thanking me for that. So, you know, I was grateful to just have that positive memory. But, you know, all the time that me and my family and all of us loved ones, we invested in him, believing it, you know, not like they did with, like, is he the one, but understanding that, you know, everybody, that all of these brothers and sisters, all these children that are born, they are gifted. They have a purpose. They have a plan. And so now, since he's gone, that plan falls to the ground. But someone else has to step into the spot. Now, one of the things that you talked about in terms of that tape that I thought was interesting was when Biden talked about the whole idea of connecting, or we need to get together with the Latinos. So what, one of the things that I was looking at was, you know, these initiatives that were on the ballot during this past election. And in California, Proposition 16, which was repealing Proposition 209, which is dealing with affirmative action, like actually saying that you can actually look at race or whatever. That repeal that they tried to put through lost. 56% to 44%. And you would think with all the things that have happened, the uproar and all the things going on in this country, especially with George Floyd and all this type of stuff like that, that you would think that that reversal would have happened. But the key thing that you brothers talked about, and people need to open their damn eyes. Nicholas Vacher wrote a book called The Bazoom Alliance, right? The Bazoom Alliance between blacks and Latinos. And then Stokely Carmichael talked about it can't be any alliances between people until I get something and you get something out of it. Otherwise, it doesn't, that we don't win. So then I asked myself, why did that proposition, the reverse 209, right? You can't take race into account in any type of situation or whatever. Why did it fail? Because blacks not voting. Because Latinos and Asians came out and with the whites and voted the damn thing down. Now you need to start thinking about this whole idea of who you call an ally. Now you need to start thinking about really what's going on with these individuals, because their policies and what they believe is going on and looking out for their best interests in their communities, because they're not the ones that are suffering and getting into these schools and getting these opportunities. It's black people that are the ones that are having the trouble. Asians ain't the ones suffering and getting into the schools. And we have a battle going on here in New York where we're dealing with some of these specialized schools, and we're trying to get rid of the chest for the specialized schools and then make it open so everybody can get in. And the Asians fought against it. And we had a black representative testify at a meeting, and Charles Barron was there because he counteracted and supported black people. Charles Barron was there, and this black politician stood up and was in support of the Asians. I was like, I can't believe that. And I blasted him on my show. So, you know, when you brothers talk about this idea that we have to raise up individuals and we have to teach them and grow them and then support them and then put them in office, you're 100% right. Because they are only going to go as far, like you said, as they're going to go. They had an opportunity to reverse this thing where they know how the impact of black people being accepted into these schools and these opportunities that blacks get, and they refuse to do it. They refuse to do it. Wow. You know, and I find myself getting frustrated because we keep seeing consistently that there's a narrative out here that people, and I said this on my show before, I told people, do not get caught up in this whole idea of all these white people being out in the street with you. I don't give a damn about any of these white people being in the street, because they ain't out here for the reason you think they are. And you hit it on the head, Elliot, you hit it on the head there, because when push comes to shove, they get to go back home and have and live their white privilege while you get to go back home and live your limited privilege. I tell black people, you don't have freedom, you have limited freedom. And in that I don't know if y'all discussed the video of that Ohio stop with the police and that white gentleman.
I'm not aware. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, it was an Ohio stop with this young white guy. A police officer stopped him. He had
you're talking about the one that had the sandwich? He had a sandwich?
No, not the dude. This is the white dude that they stopped in Ohio. Not the dude that had the sandwich. Okay. They shot and killed him. That guy was black.
Okay.
This is a white guy that they stopped. They stopped. The trooper stopped him, whatever. He had a gun on his lap. They gave him instructions to get out of the car. He refused to do it. They said he was. They said to him they would sick the dog on him, and he said, "I'll shoot you." This is on tape. This is on tape. And the thing that was so crazy about it was he took his hands off the steering wheel and eventually drove off. And nothing happened to him. He didn't get shot. They had two troopers out there. Both of them had their guns pointed at him. He had a gun on, or actually not on his lap, on the seat, the passenger seat next to him. And they saw the gun. And they physically grabbed him. He told them, don't grab me. Let go of me. I have a right to be here. I have, you know, he said something about castle, whatever. But the thing that was so interesting is because you look at situations of that nature, and the outcome was if it had been someone of color, we know he would have got shot. Because I think I sent you something from a case that's going on in New York that went back in 2019 with Kawasaki Treywick, excuse me, that was having a mental crisis or whatever. And then the police, within 2 minutes of encountering him, shot him and killed him. And ProPublica actually did a video, which is up there online on YouTube. People can check it out. Kawasaki Treywick, if you don't know the case, you probably don't know it because they ain't talking about it nationally. This is a local situation in New York. And stuff, and this is somebody that was having a mental crisis, and obviously anybody could see it. And within 2 minutes, Richard, of them being there, he was dead. 2 minutes, and then they had already made a statement talking about, you know, well, it was justified because he had a knife or he had a stick in his hand or whatever. But you watch the full video, you see what I'm talking about. So again, you know, it really gets to me when I listen to some of these brothers and sisters that I'll be talking to, and I sit to myself and I wonder, I mean, maybe I'm not doing a good job. And then I listen to you brothers and I see the work that y'all are putting in where you're trying to educate people, you're trying to get information out there to people. And so we can only go but so far if people decide that they do choose not to be ignorant. You know, there's nothing wrong with being ignorant. The only thing wrong with being ignorant is if you decide to remain in that state. And so that's the problem I have with a lot of these things going on, man. I don't want to keep going on and on. I want to see what you bubbles have to say because, you know, and one other thing I do want to say, I mean, I don't know if y'all talked about it because I've been so busy running crazy. I know that, you know, people talked about that case, the Charles case down in Louisiana where the young man was found in the sugarcane field after being taken from his family or whatever without permission and it was beast by white people or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were never charged and then they whatever. But, and then, you know, I'm not going to mention the person's show, but people kept going back and they kept talking about, well, it's similar because of the way he was found. And you saw the pictures of, I think it's Kawan Charles is his name. They compared it to Emmett Till. But what made me angry about that, and I'm tired of people always going back to Emmett Till. Let me tell you why. Because we got cases that are even more recent than that we need to be talking about. We can go back to Michael Donnell. Look that up. Michael Donnell. Michael Donnell, who was lynched, okay, in Memphis in 1981. We ain't got to go back to Emmett Till. Michael Donnell's mother sued the Klan, United Klans, and beat them, okay, bankrupt them, and took over their property or whatever. But nobody talks about that. Beulah May Donnell. And then you get these Negroes that get on TV. Well, I think the white person that did that negative thing suffered enough, so I should, you know, we can just let them. No. We need to hold them accountable and stuff. Like this dude, what is his name? Christian Cooper in New York. So whenever you want, people want to point out, well, you're going back to Emmett Till, and there's no disrespect to Emmett Till. Think about Michael Donnell. They named the street after him. They got a museum down there, but he's just as dead. Just like Juan Charles. I'm sorry, brother.
No. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Well,
go ahead. Go ahead. Say that. Finish your thought, Brother Maurice.
No. Go ahead. You go ahead.
No. Well, I mean, listen. I heard you talking about some of these cases because it's similar to what happened here in Philadelphia about a month ago. A brother by the last name Wallace. I think it was Walter Wallace, Richard.
Yeah.
Yes.
Had mental and he was well known to the police in that district that he had some mental problems because they had been called to his home before in the past In fact, that day when he was murdered, they had been called there twice that day. And his mother called. And she was out there with him when the cops appeared on the scene. And I think it was about 5 minutes later, he was gunned down right in front of his mother and his wife and several people.
With the same kind of rationale. He had a knife in his hand or something.
And you know,
yeah, I sent you Ellie the video. So if you get a chance, you know, because I know you're busy today, but you get a chance to check it out. But again, it really gets to me. Now I just want to touch base a little bit on something you said about this whole COVID thing, right? Because we just did a segment talking about this whole issue of what happens can your employer fire you if you decide not to take the COVID-19 vaccine. And the answer in most states, the answer is yes. So if black people didn't have the answer. The answer is yes. Okay. That doesn't mean that you need to take the vaccine. You know, I'm looking at them doing the vaccine testing. I think the Times came out and all these people came out talking about Australia doing their vaccine testing. What happened was that because they're using HIV proteins or whatever, people were coming back with false positives or whatever. This is reported in the New York Times. This is Australia. So they had to scrap that particular line that of vaccine they were going through. This was reported in the Times 2 days ago. So my thing is like this. When you're dealing with an RNA virus, which AIDS is, how do you have a vaccine for this but not for AIDS? Both of them are RNA viruses. And this came out of one of the doctors that was on my show. She said this. Dr. Kwanzaa. She said this. So, I'm not an expert. I'm not giving you no advice. You black people, you have critical thinking skills. You're intelligent. You can look at things. You can understand things. You can analyze history, whatever. The things that they did to us throughout history, medical apartheid. You got the book, Medical Apartheid. Read it. None of this stuff was accident. And it wasn't just if I hear somebody just say with Tuskegee, stop it.
It wasn't just Tuskegee.
They were all over the damn place doing stuff to black people and testing on people all over the damn place or whatever. And every time you think about a specular with women gynecology, you think about that devil that was testing black women without anesthesia, who they lord as the modern day gynecologist or whatever. So use common sense. You know, I think, Elliot, you had a few brothers and sisters that was on the show that talked about holistic medicine. They talked about eating right, exercising, getting the, what is it, like a G-bomb thing? I can't remember the brother that you had on. Mm-hmm. But I've been telling everybody, like, well, Maurice, you can't say that because it's not a cure. I'm not saying it's a cure. I'm saying to you that you can strengthen your immune system so you can take care of yourself and your family, and then you can fight this stuff off if you get it.
Yeah, you're right.
But with employment, yes, they can fire you. And what they're doing now is, you ask the question, how are they going to be able to do it? Well, I'm gonna answer that for you. They are using people's phone. They're using artificial intelligence and these new programs, the biotechware that's out there now, that's going to be able to measure your temperature, be able to look at you, and then determine if you have COVID or whatever. And they're going to also use that same technology to be able to like verify if you had the shot or not.
Yep.
So I was arguing with somebody because they were telling me, you know, what's the biggest threat? I said artificial intelligence is the biggest threat to the black community. They said no, it's not. I said yes, it is. Artificial intelligence makes decisions. These automated decision making systems. One of the largest ones in the world is the DOM system. Most people don't even know what that is. That's the domestic awareness system, which the New York City Police Department uses. And it gathers data. And then the thing that I said, I had to tell people, I said, I walked around my community, right? And I looked to where the police cameras were. And they were always around schools. Guess what they're doing? Because black people are not participating in joining these particular studies where they can take your facial recognition and add your information to the system. But this DOM awareness system, which the police department is using and selling to other countries. And if you don't believe me, you go to the website, you go to the city government website, New York City government website, look up domain awareness system, DOM. They're selling that, which are taking and they're using your information and they put it into the system. They're analyzing you. These systems are making decisions about you. We're fighting right now in New York because one of the things that people wouldn't even think about would be discrimination by these artificial intelligence systems in employment. We're trying to get laws passed because we see that they're using these to determine, and they don't tell you if they're using the system to determine if you can be gainfully employed by a company. So we want more transparency. We want more resolution to the situation where if they find out that they're using these systems and it discriminates, that they can be punished. Right now, there's no law about that. This is open ground. So these are the things that people need to understand. Artificial intelligence makes decisions about if you get health care or not. I talked about this before, Ellie, with y'all, that they, with this whole COVID thing came down. How do they determine if you get a ventilator versus somebody else? It ain't the doctors making the decision. It's the artificial machines that are making the decisions. So these things that people need to take a deeper look. Yes, we need to develop leadership, but we need to also educate ourselves about what these people are doing that is controlling our lives. From you driving down the street and getting a traffic ticket to you going to the hospital, artificial intelligence is making all of those decisions. And when you have individuals who are developing these systems who are biased, then it affects your life. And so you need to be looking at that. I don't know what's going on in Philadelphia, brother, because we're fighting a battle in New York. We're not fighting a winning battle because, you know, unfortunately, like you said, we love Charles Barron and we love his wife. They are true champions and we love them dearly. But, you know, sometimes you have people that they believe that this compromise game is the best way to go. And the other thing that you said, I'm going to get off after this, your brothers. I promise to shut up. I had a lot to say. But I thought about you, Elliot, and I thought about something you had said to me privately or whatever. And it's coming true. It seemed like everybody that was in the Obama administration is coming right back with Biden. Wow. The same devils that we tried to get out on Obama is back with Biden. And I think The Intercept, which reported this 15 minutes of an hour long conversation that you were playing. The thing that's interesting about it is, where's the rest of the hour? I like to know where the rest of the hour is so I can hear what else was said.
Yeah, I know it. But
look, I'm going to get off, brothers, and I'm going to just listen. And I apologize to for taking us so much time. But family, know one thing, man. We love you, man. We love you. Black men screaming in time for awakening. We are family and stuff. We work together. We cross-pollinate and stuff. We work together to educate you. And we love you. And we want the best for black people. You know, George Washington Carver, which my great uncle said, no one has a right to come into this world and leave it without leaving a distinct reason why you were here. Each and every one of you have a distinct reason why you were created and you were here, and you have a unique gift and talent that we need. Not that we want, we need it. We needed black people in this hour and this time. God bless y'all. I'm getting off now.
Well, Reese, thank you for your contribution.
All right, take care now.
He had a lot to say there, Richard. He was on point with a lot of things he said. We got, let's go to this call, and then we'll take a brief break and come back and kind of wind it down. Let's go to 267. 267?
Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, I enjoyed those two brothers, Brother X and Brother Maurice. I could listen all night to that. You know, it's one of them times I could just listen. You know, I see how you got that caption on Biden talking. I heard people talking about it, but nobody could get it like you. One thing about you, you do your research and you pull up all the stuff that you need to pull up. Everybody can't do what you do.
Well, I listened. Brother Maurice sent me that, so I give him the credit for that.
Well, that was good, man. You know, just listening, man, was one of them listening nights, so. All right, just going to the next call. It's good, man. You know,
all right.
But I heard.
All right, brother. Peace.
Stay strong. Stay focused. Yeah.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we've got two callers waiting, and we'll take them right after the break. 215-490-9832 is the contact number. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. IBBToMe.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. IBBToMe.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI. The only word you need to know to join your global Commit You Black family, to join your interconnected Commit You Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. IBBToMe.com, IBBToMe.TV, IBBToMeTV.com, IBBToMe.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
That this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals, and the drug dealers, and the killers, and the vagabonds of society, we're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back. Time for an Awakening is 9:13. Come down the home stretch on Time for an Awakening. Richard, before we go back to the phones, you know, I failed to read this I failed to read this on Friday, but let me share this little tidbit of information. President-elect Joe Biden has reportedly decided to nominate retired General Lloyd Austin, as a current member of Raytheon's board of directors, to serve as the Pentagon chief. I don't want to read all of it. I'll just read a couple of these paragraphs. This raised alarms about the selection of another retired general, particularly one with close ties to the weapons industry, to lead the Department of Defense amid a growing push by the Democratic Party's left flank to cut the Pentagon's budget and bring U.S. wars overseas to an end. According to Politico, Biden's transition team has appointed at least four retired generals or admirals and a former top enlisted Marine. While the president-elect has vowed to suspend arms sales to Saudi Arabia and end U.S. support for the kingdom's catastrophic assault on Yemen, the person Biden has reportedly picked to lead the Department of Defense is on the board of Raytheon, a key supplier of bombs to the U.S.-Saudi war in Yemen, and that has lobbied aggressively in opposition to curb arms sales to Saudi Arabia's led coalition, as reported by the Times. Here we go with another one. He's black, Richard. Mm-hmm. If you remember when we talked about the new woman that's going in as the UN ambassador. Mm-hmm. And I got to get that clip together and play that, which she said in an interview, that when it comes to foreign policy, it's always bipartisan agreement among politicians. You remember when she said that, Richard?
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to the continent. So as if it's always bipartisan agreement when it comes to the continent, and just using that as an example, you remember when Trump, and see, that was one of the reasons why they didn't want him in there, because he says the first thing that comes to his mind, and a lot of that's not how European politicians try to portray themselves. When he said that Africa was full of shithole countries or something to that respect, that's how they feel. That's the policy. Mm-hmm. It's a racist, white supremacist foreign policy. So even though he said that, they didn't want him to say that, but that's how they feel. But let me read this in relation to this guy that sits on this board, because it reminds me of what's his name that was on Halliburton's board, the former vice president.
Dick Cheney.
Now, check this out. It says the Trump administration told Congress in November 10th that it had approved the sale of the United Arab Emirates of weapons made by General Atomics, Lockheed Martin, and Raytheon Technology. The deal included the F-35, the world's most advanced jet fighter, more than 14,000 bombs and munitions, and the second largest sale of U.S. drones to a single country. The White House said the sale directly supports U.S. foreign policy and national security objectives by enabling the United Arab Emirate to deter increasing Iranian aggressive behavior and threats in the wake of the recent deal with Israel. So that deal that Raytheon and Lockheed Martin was involved in is a $23 billion deal that was approved. Now, Biden comes in and he appoints a black general who sits on Raytheon's board. So does that tell especially black folks that they're going to de-escalate any type of aggressiveness? I was reading the third chapter of Dr. Earl Henderson's book, and said that anarchy is the life's blood of U.S. Foreign policy and foreign relations. That anarchy, having these things, these wars going all around, that's in fact, U.S. foreign policy, that's the life's blood of Europeans, having these type of wars, conflicts, so they can supply one side or supply the other, and sometimes supply both sides.
Yep.
So, yep. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there that they just approved, and this is probably the last thing he's going to do in that office. He approved that sale of $23 billion of all of those munitions and weapons, 14,000 bombs, who knows how many hundreds of thousands of people that's going to kill. But 14,000 bombs, $23 billion worth of arms. And then he comes in, this new president, and appoints as a top post at the Pentagon somebody that sits on Raytheon's board. And just for information, let me read this. It says the U.S., and this came from a DefenseOne.com. It says the U.S. exported arms worth $55 billion in the past year. It says the U.S. exported weapons worth more than $110 billion over the past 2 years, a top Pentagon official said on Tuesday. That's $55.4 billion in the fiscal year of 2019, which ended on September 30th, and $55.6 billion in 2018. According to Lieutenant General Charles Hopper, Director of Defense Security Cooperation Agency, the arm of the Pentagon that oversees foreign arms sales. The fiscal year's total that included 2017, they sold $42 billion. 2016, 33.6. 2015, $47 billion. 2014, $34.2 billion. That's just in arms sales, Richard.
Mm.
That's just in arms sales. In death.
That's it.
And you got a black guy, and he's going to, that's supposed to be somebody you're supposed to be proud of, tell your children to look up to, and that's going to be a black face on American imperialism.
Mm.
Let's go. We got a couple calls. Let's go to North Carolina. 919. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot, how you doing? Brother Richard, how y'all brothers doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Our praise be to Allah. You know, Brother Maurice's comments was right on point, and I feel the pain. Of mine's happened years ago, but I know where Brother Maurice's coming from because I lost a nephew to violence, too, back in 2006 in Buffalo. He was shot. And what made his death so tragic, Ellen Richard, and the top we can listen on is, it wasn't even intended for him. It was intended for a friend of his over a girl, you know, but they don't make my cousin no less deceased, you know what I'm saying? Like my nephew no less deceased. And he was one of my favorite nephews, man. And, you know, he's 25 years old. You know, life just cut short over foolishness, man, over some girl that he had nothing to do with. He just with his friend, and this fool just starts shooting at his friend, and he wound up taking a bullet to the head, you know. So, you know, my sister's still grieving, you know, to this day, man. Just so hurtful, you know. But, you know, Brother Elliot and Rich, I don't know where to begin. Y'all had such a myriad of topics and stuff, man. I'm going to, you know, first on the situation with Biden, you know, again, you know, that slave mindset that you see with Biden and stuff and what he has said, you know, to these Negroes is that he just talks so condescending and so down to them Negroes and stuff. And like you said, Elliot, it was no comeback, was no back and forth. They just, Biden just chastised them and they took it like the slaves that they are, you know what I'm saying? The slaves that they are, you know. But I'm just going to, you know, try to run through a couple of things real quick so, you know, so other people get on. When you talk about the police, what Brother Maurice put about the case in Ohio, well, that's the case of the tale of two Ohios, because Ellie, you was referenced to the brother that got shot in, I think in Columbus, the capital of Ohio. He was, like I said, he just came back from the 7-Eleven. I mentioned this past Friday. And come to find out, Elliot, this brother who had just, you know, who was licensed to have a carry gun, by the way, and he had a gun on him and stuff, but the police at that time didn't know if they did. No, he wasn't, he sure wasn't threatening with nobody. But my point is that he was on his doorstep, ringing his, you know, putting his key in his door, going to the house with his sandwich from Subway. This white sheriff shot home a deputy who wasn't even a deputy for that area. He was for the whole, you know, area. He was for, like, the whole jurisdiction of that area. He was out there working in conjunction with, the FBI or some other law enforcement. But bottom line, you see this disturbing pattern, Ellen Richard. This brother was shot 3 times in his back. I mean, how you keep – I mean, again, you see that in Philadelphia with this cop that shot David Jones if you're in the back, you know. These white cops, the brother in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Jacob Blake, shot 7 times in the back. These white cops love shooting black men in the back, you know. I mean, they shoot us anywhere in the body, but I'm just saying it's this thing about shooting black. And I thought, L.A., if correct me if I'm wrong, that wasn't in Western law, in white man's Western law, shooting somebody in the back was an act of cowardice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but they have no problem shooting black men in the back. You know,
and how can you, how can you see what's in a man's hand if you shoot him in the back?
Exactly. But they just got this thing for shooting brothers in the back, man. You know, it's just, you know, I'll tell you, man, our people just for to wake up and realize what we're dealing with. These people don't have no humanity towards our people. Now, I want to first thank you and Richard for playing the clip of Biden again, because three good brothers that listen to the show, Brother James, Brother Dennis, and Brother Stanley, and I'm sure other people that didn't get a chance to listen to Biden's clip when you played it on Friday. I'm glad you replayed it so those brothers and all the other sisters and brothers throughout the United States and around the world had a chance to listen to Biden's insulting rhetoric and stuff. Because they didn't get a chance to listen this past Friday. So thanks, Brother Ellen Richard, for playing that tonight. You just go to show you know, you're just substituting one slave master for another. And as I say, the only difference between Joe Biden and Trump, he just won't be saying the stupid stuff out of his mouth, you know, so to speak. He say stupid stuff out of his mouth too. Biden does too, because he just, because he either racist or saying out or combination of everything. But the point is that he's just smart or shrewd enough. He won't say the kind of stuff that, because white folks don't like this unpresidential type stuff. So he'll be presidential. He'll be dropping bombs on Africa with this house Negro that he appointed as Pentagon chief. But it'll be okay because he's not, you know, name calling and stuff. But these brothers and sisters be still dying in these Islamic and African nations. They still be dying. But see, he won't be saying, he won't be calling them asshole countries and all that kind of stuff. But his bombs will be just as deadly using his Negro, as Brother Fred, the late great Brother Fred, would say, black face on white power. And like you said, Elliot, we should be wise and tired of that foolishness of these black face, because that don't mean nothing. You know, black face on white power. And you know, Elliot, I heard a disturbing thing, Elliot, and again, fact check this if you can, because as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say, always check things out. Don't just take a brother's word for it necessarily. Even if a brother has a record of being trusted, do some research on it. Shirley Sherrod, who I love dearly, who I have a lot of respect, the sister that lost their job because of people like Millsack and Bright brought with that lie where they distorted the tape and said that she hated white people. When she didn't say that, she said as a child she said it, but she said she got older, she realized that some Caucasians was decent, if you want to use that term, decent, and she said she didn't hate all white people. When she came and left, she hated them because they treated her father, but they cut that part out of her speech. But again, Brother Elliot, you see clearly, I don't know what it's like, our people had that Stockholm syndrome. The more and more white folks mistreat us, the more and more that we love them. I mean, it's just a sad thing. And we're not bringing this up, Elliot, because a brother who I have a lot of respect for had told me that. He said, Brother Joe, Millsap, who was instrumental in her losing her job as the agricultural secretary, the one that Biden now is nominating to take her old job, she voiced a support for him. She sent out a tweet or whatever saying it's a wise choice, it's a good choice, and she applauded Biden for selecting this guy. I'm like, saying, why would you be happy with this guy getting your old job and this filthy bigot, you know, help cause you to lose your job? You know what I mean? And I bring this up, Brother Ellen, Brother Richard. It's a parallel here in Philadelphia. You remember the common police court judge, Messiah Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
Remember her? I think she was nominated to be a federal judge. I think it was either by Bill Clinton. I think it was either Clinton or either Bush, one of them nominated her to be a federal judge. I can't remember
Frederica Jackson.
That's it, Frederica Messiah Jackson. Thanks, Brother Elliot. I knew I got a name kind of skewed up, the first name. Well, anyway, Elliot, Lynn Abraham, our racist former district attorney here in Philadelphia, Jewish woman, bigot to the max. Her and her husband, Frank Ford, cold-blooded bigots and stuff to the max. And as you know, Lynn Abraham was so racist in her pushing for the death penalty, the New York Post threw out to her, the New York Times said she was the deadliest DA. I mean, she pushed for the death penalty more than any even some of her racist white male counterparts. That's how bigoted she was, especially when it came to black folks and stuff. Well, after Lynn Abraham did all that stuff, got all these other racist prosecutors to go against her and had her nomination to be a federal judge, had it rescinded. She was all set to be that, and because of all the uproar that Lynn Abraham started, she kept her from being a federal court judge and stuff. They rescinded it, you know, just like they did with Obama's pick for the Civil Rights Commission, because he said that Mumia Abdul-Jabbar didn't get a fair trial. But here's the deal, Brother Ellen Richard. After all that, Frederica Jackson still remained a common police court judge. That's where she remained the rest of her life until she retired from the bench. But here's the thing. After all that, this woman still had the audacity. After this way this white woman treated her, she came and Lynn Abraham ran for that last time. She came out and supported her. I said, you got to be kidding me. After what this woman did, stymied your career, and you won't still support her anyway. Now, you got to ask yourself, Brother Elliot, if a black person did, or Brother Richard did this to either one of these sisters, would they have been so forgiven? Since this mindset, when it comes to white folks, you know, it's like when you played that thing the other day, I think what Brother Maurice was saying about how, this white person, they suffered enough, let's forgive them. But it's like our people had that mindset when it comes to white folks, but they don't have that same sympathy when it comes to their own. You know what I mean? It's outrageous that you would support a woman like that, but she did this to you, man. You know, it's like that self-hating stuff, man. And so when that brother told me about Shirley Bobby Sherrod supporting Millsap. I almost fell out of my chair when the brother told me. I said, you got to be. He said, brother, y'all went live to these brothers. They say, check it out. You'll see. You go on the internet or whatever, you see her comments, which she came out clearly and applauded Joe Biden for picking this bigot to be his agricultural secretary. I said, wow. You know, but again, I can't say I'm surprised because, again, that's that mindset with our people when it comes to white folks, man. We no matter what these people can do, we can find, they can kill our whole family, and we'll find a way in some sick, perverted way to forgive them. But a brother could have did something to you 25 years ago, and you would be still hating them to the day you die. Some brother in high school might have had a beef with you in high school, whatever the case may be. Now we petty like that, Elliot and Richard, but we still hating on the brother. We hate, we'll carry that grudge to the grave. But some white old bigot or white cop or whatever can kill our family, or white, some white maniac or whatever in the church in South Carolina can do whatever, and we'll find some way to look in the Bible and, hey, yes, you know, the art of forgiveness. And we even forgive them even when they don't ask for it, you know? I don't know. I mean, I guess sometimes, man, I tell you. And I close with these last couple of things. As I'm talking to you, Richard, I got the TV on, and I was watching a little bit of the post-game show. And, you know, it's amazing, Brother Elliot, how they do our sisters and our black folks. You know the beautiful sister, Simone Biles, the gymnast, Elliot, who won the gold medal?
Yeah.
Beautiful young black sister. They got her doing a commercial for White Sissy Boy. I don't know if you and Richard saw it yet. I mean, I can see a look on her face when she's doing a commercial with this guy. Like, really? I know I'm getting paid to do this, but really, y'all really want me to do this? I mean, this little white guy's twisting around like he got sugar in his tank coming out. I said, man, you got... Oh, man, I tell you, the stuff they put our people through in this country just to make a dollar. This beautiful black sister, this black queen, making a commercial for a white sissy boy. I mean, you got to be kidding. Oh, man, the stuff they put our people through. And this is why I closed with these last couple of stuff, Brother Jerry and anybody else could get on. See, that's one of the things, like a brother was talking about, Bill. That's one of our Bill Cosby is in jail because no matter what you think about, Bill Cosby was always expressing black manhood. I don't know if you and Richard is aware of this, but... They had people like, and I'm not trying to degrade Flip Wilson, but they had, you know, Flip Wilson put on a dress, and some other black comedians put on a dress, Martin Lawrence and all them. But they said that Bill Cosby was adamant, him and Dave Chappelle, them two brothers was adamant. They not wearing makeup and a dress. You know what I mean? I mean, they just went all totally against the white culture thing where they want black men to dress up like women. Bill Cosby said, hell no, I'm a man. I'm not dressed up like no woman. You know, I don't care how much money y'all going to pay me. I'm not doing it. You know what I'm saying? He like Dr. King, you use this term, Brother Elliot, Dr. King said, don't let nobody take your manhood. Well, Bill Cosby made it clear, I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? So he definitely ran afoul of the so-called Hollywood elite and establishment by not even doing those kind of things. That's something I just wanted to, you know, run past y'all brothers and stuff, man, you know. And lastly, Elliot, on the notes so Brother Jay could get on, or whomever's behind me, you, Elliot, when you get off this phone and after you close down the show with Brother Richard, you'll find out, Brother Elliot, you may have an up-and-coming superstar black quarterback in this town. He won the game here in this town, man, and he's just setting the city on fire, man. So the white boy, if the racism can die down a little bit, the white boy shouldn't get his job back if you get my drift, Elliot. I don't think I have to say anymore, Brother Elliot. You get my drift. This boy set it on fire tonight here in Philadelphia, Elliot, you know?
All right. Well,
just want to get a heads up, brother. You'll see it for yourself, you know. But anyway, I like just, you know, put me on mute now and I listen to the rest of the show, man. But yeah, our people got to step up to the plate, man. We know what the Negroes going to do. That's the blacksmith's leadership. They're going to do what they do with Biden, like they do with these other white Democrats. These white can kick them up their behind, but as long as it's not a white Republican doing it, it's okay. So this is what we got to step up and say. Look, we ain't taking this nonsense off of Trump. We ain't going to take it off of Biden either. And that's what we got to be very clear to these Negroes, these Negro misleadership. Let them know y'all might be the butt kissers and the gatekeepers, but we're not going to do that. And that's basically what we got to do. But thanks, Elliot and Richard. I'll get off now. And put me on mute, Elliot, now and listen for the rest of the show.
Talk to you.
Thanks, Brother Elliot.
It's 9:34. Coming down the home stretch, we got two more callers. Let's go to 773. 773.
You got me, brother?
Yep.
But I want to thank you two young brothers for taking this call. And I want to thank the brother for giving me a shout out. It really did my heart good. Now, four former presidents went to Texas about a flood. Follow me on this, people. Four former president went to Texas about a flood. One former president and one president, Barack O. Bush and George Bushwacker, they went to the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Montgomery, Alabama, to commemorate Bloody Sunday. Jimmy Peanut Carter, former president from Georgia, he loved people all over the world so much. He go all over the world building houses for the poor. Bill Gates loved poor people all over the world. He go all over the world. He won't give them this confusion. I mean computer. Where are these people speaking out on this racist Nazism that is exploding in this country? The head of the Republican Party in Arizona a few days ago, he asked the psychopaths, are you ready to die for Donald Trump? What he's saying, are you ready to die for Donald Gillum? But there's no outcry from leadership. How can this be? You Mr. Human Rights. You Mr. Democracy. You Mr. Gonna help everybody. Got a vaccine form. You want to save everybody. So you got a president spewing violence, his people with him spewing violence, and all these former presidents are quiet. Why? Why are you quiet? Why aren't you standing up and saying, no, this is not the arm. We're not having this. This is America. Why are they so quiet?
Because they don't want
that.
Oh, go ahead.
For the slaves that, sir?
Go ahead. No, finish your thought. Go ahead.
They are quiet, people, because this is a system of racism and white supremacy. It's a worldwide system. So all those former presidents, they know what Donald Hitler is doing. They know the power structure that got him there doing it, and they are not going to challenge that power. And that's why they don't say nothing. So now we are subject to something that can jump off at any minute, where black people can be exterminated. Black people need to think about that. As this chaos keep ringing, where does it stop? It keeps going up, up, up. What happens when it explodes? When it explodes, we can be exterminated. This empire been here for at least 3,000 years, I know. There's no way Donald Hitler just walked in. The people run this empire, they pick the president. They pick Barack O. Bush, Clinton, they pick them all. You don't just walk in there. They pick you. They pick Donald Hitler. There's a space station in outer space, like a bubble. People go back and forth there all the time. They set up trips where a person can pay. I forgot how much money they charging. Well, you can fly back and forth to outer space.
$1 million.
How much is it, brother?
I think it's $1 million.
$1 million. Now think about that, people. Here we got chaos ringing in America, on the verge of total chaos and black people being exterminated. And you got people going back and forth to outer space, to a space bubble. They ain't worrying about no virus. They are not worrying about this, these Nazis running around, white supremacists running around with assault weapons. They are not worried about that. Ask yourself, people. Why they're not worried? Do they not know what that can lead to? Do they not want to stop that? Do they not want to speak out against that? No, they do not. So we all can come to agreement. This is a worldwide system are racism and white supremacy. They are all in cahoots. Final thing, since we know that, what do the slaves do? Now, each slave going to have to think about that for themselves. Do you want to stay here when this stuff jump off, when we don't have a chance against these psychopaths, the government behind them? They got all these assault weapons. They outnumber us 1,000 to 1. Do you want to stay here and face that? Or if you had the opportunity to escape out of here to get some young grandson, a grandchild, or some daughter to get them out of here before these sick psychopaths get their hands on them. And you know what they going to do when they get their hands on them. Now, this is very important, too. I am not that good on computer. I look up, send an email, and all that stuff, get a talk show. But some people out there, listen to me very carefully. If you're good on the computer, you're a good blogger. Ask the world, is the only solution for the slave in America is for us to be exterminated? Present that to the world. We're not going to be able to ask for help when we are on the run and when this chaos starts. The time to do that is right now. We can't expect no help from no white supremacy country. You can forget that. Britain, France, Russia, Belgium, all them people, white supremacy. And plus, now they moving into Africa. But we will have a chance to shout out our story to the world about what's going to happen to us and what we fear. So if you are good on a computer, day and night, tell your friends, ask the world, is the only solution for the slaves in America is for us to be exterminated. Now, there was a news story not too long ago about a psychopath shot and killed a young girl somewhere out west. And the news said that he killed her because he wanted to teach her a lesson. And they blowed that all over the news. He wanted to teach her a lesson. Was that important for the news to do that? Think about the lynchings. The lynching was, most of them, to teach us a lesson. Remember Dylan Roof now. A lot of people are missing this. Dylan Roof was sent there by older white supremacists. They are behind these young Caucasians doing this terror. Dylan Roof killed those people and left that church down there in North Carolina. Dylan Roof didn't have to be caught. Think about that. Didn't nobody see him. He didn't have to be caught. Dylan Roof wanted to be caught. He's a living martyr to white supremacy and terror. That's why he wanted to be caught. That's why he went to court and blurred out, yeah, I'll do it again. I'm proud of it. To show the other young white psychopath that's coming behind him that he carried out his mission. Now, look how many young white boys came behind Dylan Roof doing this terrorism. That's why he wanted to be caught. He's a living martyr. They say living martyr is more highly graded than the martyr who gave his life and died. The other people can look to the living martyr. So these other young white boys, they look to a Dylan Roof who is still alive. Black people, we are in a serious, very serious situation. We don't even have nobody speaking out on this psychopathic conduct. These people are psychopaths. Y'all know that. Doesn't anybody. You had 300 police make a damn video or something showing their face. Psychopaths. No fear.
These people are sick. And we know they sick. So if you can't escape, give it some thought. Don't leave because I ain't telling nobody what to do. But think about it. Are you ready to deal with war in this white supremacist, psychopathic country that runs Earth and space? Are you ready to deal with them? If you are not, then you should be thinking about escaping. And since, and especially that one's up in Philadelphia, when it starts, you might be able to make it to Canada. If you do, turn yourself in right away. Ask for political asylum. That don't mean they're not going to kill you. Canada is white supremacy, too. It don't mean they're not going to kill you. But if you can make it there, turn yourself in right away and ask for political asylum. And I know Brother Rich going to say, hey, I'm scaring people. He ain't going nowhere. And that's but the people who ain't ready for war, the people got a six-year-old granddaughter, nine-year-old son, and you know what them psychopaths going to do to them, then you probably need want to think about, can you get them to safety somewhere? Because like I said, nobody is calling out this psychopathic conduct. That's very important. You don't have not one of a person up in leadership saying, man, this ain't right. Y'all stop this SHI. We ain't having this. All of them quiet. And see, when you quiet, you let the stuff keep festering, keep growing. That's why these white boys now just going to these rallies with assault weapons, shooting people. Look at this white boy assassinated two people. And they getting bond. And white people pay the bond. What is that? What kind of human beings are these?
Bring it on home for me.
What kind of government is this? And he make bond and he go slip on a banana peel. Just make bond and just walk around. You done shot two people, wounded another. His mama drove him to the damn rally to do it. They ain't just, they don't say nothing about her. Not only she just being arrested, they don't even say nothing about her. And a lot of these white women just as sick as these men. Because they've been conquered too. They conquered the Caucasian woman before they conquered anybody. Them damn Vikings over there, over in Europe, well, they used to go bring and take people's village.
Bring it on home for me.
Beg your pardon?
Bring it on home for me. I don't want to talk about the Vikings.
Bring it on. The Vikings, the white man conquered the white woman before he conquered anybody to get her in check. So when he would go in the people's village, take their animals.
Yeah, but I said food. I don't want to talk about the Vikings. Just bring it on home for me.
That's it. We're dealing with the Vikings today.
Okay.
We're dealing with them today, the same thing. But I was just saying, that's why the white woman support this terror. Even when they're killing young children, the white woman is silent because she's been conquered too. I want to thank you, brother. I appreciate you taking this call.
Talk to you later. Richard, it's always good to go in open forum and kind of kick things around with the listening audience.
Yes.
Well, I'll just leave it like that. Before we leave today, let me...
Before you close, can I read?
Go ahead.
I would like people to, if they have the time, to check out our book discussion around Underground Railroad at the African American Museum in Philadelphia. If you go to that website, you should be able to see. It'll be Saturday, the 19th, this Saturday, between 5:30 and 6:30. I'm gonna check me out to see if I can do this kind of a book interview.
No, wait a minute. Let me. So anybody can get involved,
right?
Because
right.
It's virtual. So just get the book and read it, and then join it and join in.
Right, or you can do it not. But hopefully we're making it to where it's interactive. Me and the person, the other docent, other volunteer who went through the book. We're trying to make it so that anybody, whether you read it or not, can be able to engage, because it's to, you know, for us to give a review, but also to be able to raise questions about what we pull out from the book. And that is, the book, The Underground Railroad by Carlson Whitehead, that we'll be doing. And that's Saturday the 19th at between 5:30 and 6:30. And you just go to the African American Museum in Philadelphia website, and you should be able to, events, and you should be able to see it.
Yeah, put that link on the that Time for Awakening Facebook page.
Will do.
And, you know, that way people can jump on there. Yeah, before we leave this evening, I want to just give the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media. That's Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue and topics on African Perspectives. That's with Brother Oshie, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on 6 o'clock from 6 to 8 Monday evenings. Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central, with host Dr. Maria Kambon and Sister Nataki Kambon, from 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations, and they ought to be starting back up any Monday now. In fact, this is the second Monday in the month. Got to see what's going on with the program there, because I know it was on a little hiatus there. On Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Friday, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 until... Then on Saturday afternoon from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And from 7 to 9 later Saturday evening, the Elders of Sankofa with Brother Alfonso Watkins. And then Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play